Hi friends, this is Christine Hoover from GraceCoversMe.com, and I want to welcome you to the By Faith podcast, where each week this season, I'm talking with a guest about the ins and outs of friendship. As I wrote about in my book, Messy Beautiful Friendship, friendship isn't easy for anyone. It takes time, intentionality, and lots of grace. And sometimes we have to navigate complexities and hurts in friendship that leave us uncertain and even crushed. I'm right there with you, and my guests are here to help us think through it all. Today, my guests are Laura Whiffler and Emily Jensen, co-founders of Risen Motherhood. Risen Motherhood is helping moms live and parent in light of the resurrection of Jesus, and they do this through their podcasts and articles and so much more. I asked Laura and Emily to join me in order to tackle friendship for moms. But what they share is so practical and helpful that it can really apply to anyone. They talk about how to make new friends and how to make friendship a priority in an already busy life. They also address heart issues that hinder our friendships, like comparison and making assumptions about other women. I know you're really going to love this conversation, and you might also have some questions that come up after listening. Each Wednesday on my Instagram stories, I'll answer any questions that stem from this week's episode. So join me there at ChristineHoover98 and bring your questions. Okay, let's get to the conversation. Here, friends, is my chat with Laura and Emily. It is my great joy to have Laura and Emily from Risen Motherhood on the podcast today. Welcome, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We're so excited to be here.
Yeah, we're super excited.
Normally, you guys are the ones asking the questions.
That's right.
But today, I get to ask you the questions, and we're going to be talking about friendship, especially for moms. Moms, not just of littles, but moms in general. Friendship is, I think, something that's on the minds of a lot of women, and it's also a struggle for a lot of women. So we're going to talk about that, but I want to start with just an introduction. I want to hear about each of you and your families and where you are and what you're doing.
All right. Well, I'll jump in first. I'm Emily Jensen, and I'm actually married to Laura's brother, Brad. So we are sister-in-laws. We live in central Iowa, and we've been married for almost 9 years now, and we have 5 little kids. Our oldest has not turned 6 yet, so we have a very busy house. And so most of my time goes to ministry in the home right now, of just caring for them and attempting to train them and teach them the things of the Lord. But also this, in the last few years, just getting more and more into ministry through Risen Motherhood. So I co-host the podcast with Laura and also manage a lot of content related things for our overall ministry. And then do writing as well. We're working on a book. So that's been a significant portion of this springtime season has been spent writing and meditating on the gospel, but also love being involved in my local church. I'm on the women's ministry team and just serve in the church nursery and do normal stuff there. So that's fun too.
Now, Laura, before you go, is the book about motherhood?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's called Risen Motherhood. At least that's the title as far as we know right now. Yeah. And it's all about the gospel and motherhood, and it's going to be released next September of 2019. So okay, it's a little ways out, but we're deep in manuscript writing phase right now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Laura, tell us about you.
Sure. Yeah, I'm Laura, and I am married and have 3 children. They are under the age of 5 as well. And my days are very similar to Emily's in the sense of primary caretaker of the kids at home with them generally. And then as we've been doing Risen Motherhood, Emily and I started the ministry 2 years ago as just a podcast. That's all it was. And it was just to air conversations that she and I were having on Voxer, an app that you talk with one another with. And we were living long distance at the time. And so it's just been really neat to see how God's grown that and just seeing the need for moms. I'm excited we're going to talk about friendship today, because Risen Motherhood, as we've gotten deeper and deeper into the ministry, we've just seen how much moms are like, okay, I know that I'm a Christian, I know that I'm a believer, but what does that mean in my daily life, in everything from the dirty dishes to, you know, serving in ministry to being a friend with someone? And so it's like the biggest joy of my life to be able to talk about that day in and day out. And so I'm spending more time there as the ministry has grown, but that's just been a huge gift. So I've recently moved to Iowa. So now Emily and I are, we're recording in person right now.
Yeah, we're kind of neighbors now.
Yeah, which we love. So God's just been really good with it all. So.
Well, I was going to ask, how did you become friends? I didn't realize y'all were related.
didn't have a choice.
But that is a unique relationship. So I would want to know how you went from being sister-in-laws, mm-hmm. sisters-in-law.
Yeah, we don't know how to say it either.
To being friends. How have you developed a friendship?
Yeah, I think that there is an element of the fact that
you're stuck with me, Laura.
Yes. There's a mentality, of course, of, you know, we want to make it work because we're family now. But how that progressed, I think, like, naturally, I'm not sure that I could say, I don't know if I've ever said this to you, Emily, but that, like, if I had met Emily just randomly, that I would be like, oh, mm-hmm. we're going to be really close friends. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that that would have been the case. You know how, like, when you meet someone, sometimes you just have, like, instant mm-hmm. connection. But over time, I think with Emily and I, as our friendship got deeper, a lot of it was through talking. Again, we were long distance. We'd never lived in the same town until just this past 4 months. But much of it was very, very long distance. And we were talking on Voxer, email, catching up over holidays or different mm-hmm. things like that. And I think a lot of it happened because we're both willing to be super vulnerable with each other. And I think it was a slower mm-hmm. friendship, mm-hmm. wouldn't you say? Like, it wasn't yeah. this overnight, like I said, this mm-hmm. connection right away. But we're always good friends, but the depth that we enjoy mm-hmm. now definitely came more gradually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think just like Laura said, being intentional about conversation, I think that Laura and I's friendship went to a new level over talking about the gospel and talking about how we apply that to our lives and how we work that out, because we have a shared love of Jesus and a shared love of his word.
Yes.
And so I think once we really tapped into that,
yeah.
I think some of our personality differences kind of started to complement each other, and we saw just great unity and great joy in understanding how the other person worked that out and thought through things, and we really challenged each other. So that was kind of how it started. And then definitely, like, being able to work on a shared project. I always think anytime you have a shared purpose with someone as well, there is just a depth of friendship that can happen there that's really, really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Who went first in being vulnerable?
Probably me.
Laura, yeah.
I tend to probably be a little bit more, Emily tends to be more private.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Yeah, but so. I don't even remember. I mean, I think it's just happened over time. It's like one of those, so gradually, you know, after you have conversation after conversation after conversation over years and years and years of asking really good questions. I think Laura's really good at asking me hard questions and direct questions.
Direct.
Where I would like to, you know, just kind of like stay talking about whatever. Like, she'll just like cut right to the heart of, well, how do you really feel about that? And so, yeah, over time, that definitely deepens a relationship.
Mm-hmm. And I think a key part of Emily and I's relationship is the fact that we are willing to ask hard questions with one another, and we really do extend grace, like whatever that answer may be. And also, we believe the best in one another. I think that's mm-hmm. just been really key to our friendship, is that Emily sometimes does think, especially when we were first-time moms, like, we had different philosophies, and sometimes I didn't understand why she was doing what she was doing, or I didn't understand, but we always trusted that, like, that person is, you know, they are submitting to their husband, they're trusting what God's plan is for their life, they're seeking it prayerfully, what the decisions should be. And so I always, like, wanted to believe the best in Emily, and I think she did the same mm-hmm. for me, where we didn't get caught up over small trivial things, and we let a lot of things go that I think can often hinder friendships among family members. And then also just, you know, even if you're not related, among moms, I think we're going to talk about it yeah. later, but some of that comparison
yeah.
stuff. So,
yeah. Well, I would love for you to tell us, as you're talking with moms and you're getting feedback from moms, I find as a pastor's wife in my church that a lot of women, they're one of their biggest concerns is relationships with other women. And especially young moms, when they're juggling kids, and some of them are working, and there's just a lot going on, but they really crave friendships with other women. So are you finding that to be true, or what are some of the biggest concerns that you're hearing from moms, especially of little ones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think there's just, to start off, a big life transition that happens. And so whenever you go from maybe having no children to having one or more children, there is just an adjustment period in general of maybe a new schedule and new burdens, new responsibilities, new things to be tired over that can make it difficult to add relationships back in. But I'll just speak for myself, and then Laura can jump in because we came up with like 10 reasons why it's hard. what we hear. But I don't know. I personally feel like now that we have a lot of little children and maybe not just one, I struggle with guilt about making time for friendships in these years, because there are so many things that need my attention. There are so many people that need me to pour out, that to take quote unquote time away for maybe my husband in the evening or in the morning or whenever those pockets of time come up, it feels like a luxury. It feels like that's not just a bath towel. That's like a really expensive soft bath towel that I really can go without. You know, that's kind of what it feels like. And so I think for me, just there's been and having to understand why friendships, especially ones that are centered around the gospel and are really life-giving, are essential and not just a luxury. And I think that can be a difficult thing to work out in your mind when you become a mom and you're looking at your priority list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that often what we hear a lot, at least through Risen Motherhood, is the feeling that no one understands me as mm-hmm. a mom. You know, like, I am the only one experiencing this. I'm the only one struggling with this. I think what many women are looking for is a mom friend that looks just like them.
Yes.
They want to find the mom that cloth diapers, or the mom that, you know, uses disposables, or she's sending the kids to the same school systems, or she's a passionate breastfeeder, or whatever it may be. And those things are fine in and of themselves, but there's a lot of hang up about wanting that friend, sort of like what I was saying with Emily, wanting that electric aura around a friendship when you first meet them. Like, you're yes. like, me too. They all want the me too moment. I mean, Emily and I want yeah. the me too moment. We're not, you know, saying everybody mm-hmm. else feels this way. We feel that way too. And so I think that's one of the biggest mm-hmm. hurdles to overcome when you're a mom, because oftentimes there are more things that are divisive, it feels like, at least in motherhood, than pre-motherhood. Mm-hmm. And so you can find little hangups about ways moms are different from you, and therefore they're not going to be a good friend for you or the right friend for you. And then I think that just being able to feel like I can get vulnerable or deep with this mom when I don't understand these certain things is difficult. It's something to overcome and mm-hmm. needs a perspective shift.
Mm-hmm. And just another thing that I thought was maybe worth touching on, Laura and I have both waded into the child with special needs territory in the last year or two. And I think there's additional challenges too, if you have maybe a more unique situation, whether it is a child who is going to a lot of doctor's appointments, a lot of therapy, maybe you are a mom to multiples, or you have foster children. I think those types of situations can also add maybe additional barriers or challenges, because you feel like, one, maybe you're alone, or really truly, like, I don't have a friend who understands the pain I'm dealing with, or the exhaustion I'm facing, whatever those things may be. Or like, your time, I think, can be really, really limited, and you just feel like, I can't be a good friend in any sense of the word, because I am so all hands on deck with this child who needs these special medical treatments, or, you know, whatever it is. And so there are just layers upon layers of challenges. I think there's hope, but mm-hmm. there definitely are real barriers. Mm-hmm.
I have a child with special needs as well, and I went through that exact thing. Mm-hmm. And that was the barrier for me as a young yeah. mom, was this, no one gets it, no one understands. Yeah. And that became a bitterness in my mm-hmm. heart. And when I realized, finally, it took me forever to realize, oh, no one is going to understand. Like, this, yeah. that's what God understands, mm-hmm. and He can handle what I'm feeling and what I'm experiencing. And he sees that, mm-hmm. but for me to put the burden on other people to be able to walk in my shoes perfectly is definitely going to keep me isolated from people, because no one is going to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. So I would love to know how you have overcome that no one understands. How have you dealt with that thought and feeling yourself?
Yeah. Laura's better at making friends than I am overcoming that. But cause I struggle with right off the bat. Like I have to convince myself again, first and foremost, that friends are essential and important. And, like, I think for me, it's less like, what do I do? How do I overcome this? And like checking my heart motivation, like you were saying of, I think in my sin, I can isolate myself and be protective. So yes. There's definitely like, we always at Risen Motherhood too, try not to gloss over like looking and examining our heart and being willing to repent and say, is there something here that is in me that is keeping me from these healthy relationships, right? And not just jumping straight to the like how to, which is still really important. But yes. I know for me, that's a, got to pass that check first, which yes. is why I really want to. And if not, why?
Yeah.
You're good at all the, you're so good at making friends.
Well, and, I mean, I don't know if that's true. I'm always being kind right now, but yeah, I think so much of overcoming those barriers of not being able to find someone like you is A, finding your acceptance in the cross, like mm-hmm. you were talking about. I think so much of us, it's the comparison game, and is her heart harder than my heart? And I'm going through something more difficult, and mm-hmm. just this measuring stick or these scales that I think we tend to place one another on. Mm-hmm. And if we are accepting our identity in Christ, if we are believing that the truth of the gospel, then we know that we have all that we need, and we know that we are found perfect in Him. And so when our hearts are planted there, I think there's so much less wandering, so much less restlessness in our hearts. And we're able then, I think, to be able to say, it's okay that she's different than me. Like, it's okay that she doesn't understand, because just like you were saying, like, but I'm accepted in Christ, and yeah. He understands me. He went through everything. Like, He experienced it all. There's nothing that He didn't mm-hmm. experience that I'm going through right now. So I don't need to look for my acceptance in this mom who looks different than me. I can rest fully free and be able to enjoy her and enjoy what she, awesome things she has going on. And I can learn from her,
yes.
or I can open up and be vulnerable and accept like her help, accept her preaching the gospel to me, and being able to grow in that, because I don't have anything to lose because I've already got it all, you know? Yes. And so when I think we shift our minds, it's kind of, again, the comparison piece. We're able to be friends with a lot of different people, and we're able to be friends with older moms who are in totally different life stages. Mm-hmm. We're able to be friends with moms whose lives looks very, very different than us. Maybe you're mm-hmm. a stay-at-home mom, and you can be friends with a working mom, or you can be friends with a single mom, you know, and mm-hmm. there's just not those expectations mm-hmm. placed on those friends to meet your needs anymore, because your needs are met in Christ and you know it. Mm.
That's so good. So good.
Expectations. Go ahead.
What did you say, Emily?
I was like, that's what came to my mind as you were talking, Laura, just like that expectations piece of, especially when we're looking to other friends going, okay, realistically, is it fair to expect them to treat me a certain way all the time, or that we're going to have a perfect friendship in the little years? Like, no, but we can enjoy what we do get together. We can go deep when we do have 1 hour or whatever it is. If she doesn't call me or text me yeah. for 3 weeks, I don't have to assume it's because she doesn't like me or whatever. I can, maybe she's got appointments, maybe she's got stuff going on. And I think being realistic, but we can only do that after we really have our hearts set on Christ mm-hmm. and yes. realize that He is our true source.
Sorry. Yes. it's like we're trying to walk this fine line between friendship is a priority and it is God's gift to us, but friendship is not the end all be all, that people right. are not going to meet our needs the way God yes. does. And so it's learning to walk in that fine line of enjoying relationships as we have them as a gift, but not putting too much weight on them. And the only way we can do that is to have our security in Christ, as you're saying. So let's, now that we've talked about the heart level of things, let's talk right. about actual practical, how do we make friends? Because I think for me, and I think a lot of the young moms I'm around, their young mom years are also the years they're moving. They're maybe their husbands are getting a new job, or they're in training for a job. And so they're in transition. There's a lot of newness not only in parenting, but wherever they are. So can you speak to maybe the new mom who's also new to an area? What are just some practical things that you would encourage them about how to make friends?
Yeah, I'll start with this one because I've moved twice now as a mom to completely new areas. One time we moved out to Chicago and I didn't know a soul completely. I mean, no family, no local connections. It was definitely start from the ground up type of thing. And I think the biggest thing that I would encourage any mom who's in a new area and a new phase of life and looking to make new friends is I kind of say, don't just show up and throw up. And what I mean by that, sorry, that might be a little crass, but is don't throw up your hands once you show up and kind of say, well, I did my job. I showed up to the local Bible study. I showed up to church. I showed up to a play date. I met up with these moms from a Facebook group. And I think what we tend to do is just kind of throw up our hands and say, well, I did that. Isn't that enough? Now everyone be friends with me and make me feel welcome and make me feel happy. And I think that is, could be reversed and might be more successful in the sense that if you can show up and then ask good questions, you know, comment on a mom's stroller and how cool it is, or how did you get the top knot like that? Or, you know, you can make conversation. And I know that there is a skill that you can grow in, and some people feel more comfortable or not, but there is an element, I think, as I have made friends and been forced to be in situations where I have literally walked up to a mom and commented on her wagon. And then 5 minutes later been like, you want to hang out? Because I was that desperate for friends. That is a true story. And I think that it's really taking that next step of being willing to answer questions in a more than a yes and no answer, in a much more thorough conversational way, being willing to ask those questions, as I mentioned, and then being willing, like, it's as scary as I would imagine men feel asking a woman on a date, you know, because you're like basically saying, you want to hang out? Do you want to take that next step? Do you want to meet up again at the park? But that is the area that I think women often, from what I hear, and I did this many times myself too, and I didn't have success. So I took decided I got to change. I'm going to show up and then I'm going to invest deep and I'm going to put myself out there, because literally I had no friends. And the worst that could happen was, well, I would still have no friends. So yeah, I just kind of felt like I had nothing to lose. And I think it taught me so much about making friends, to just go deeper with those next few steps. It's helpful.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say, don't show up and throw up, as in show up and just
I know.
Vomit your words, but it could be both, because you're saying, don't just talk about yourself, ask questions to draw out the other person.
One thing I love about, Laura's brother, Brad, it sounds like I don't know him, but he's my husband. and they both do this really well, is like, whenever I first got to know him, I just felt like the rock star of the room. And I don't think it was just because he liked me. It's because he asks everybody really good questions, and you leave and you're like, did I even ask about him? Like, we just talked about me the whole time. And I realized after I got to know him years later that before he goes into a situation, he often thinks about what he's going to ask people. And he intentionally is like, I'm just going to keep asking that person question after question after question. And it really goes deep. It makes the conversation interesting. And I was like, oh, that's how you are able to get to know someone or make them feel really comfortable or make them reveal some more heart level things that they would not have otherwise talked about. Because you think about it beforehand and you have 3 to 5 questions that you're like, I know I want to ask them about this, or I know that I want to do that. And I'm like that. If I don't think about before I'm going to hang out with a friend something that I want to talk to them deep about, I don't talk deep with them. And I feel kind of like, oh, I don't, you know, all I can talk about is what we did today, or where I talk about myself. Mm-hmm. And we're all probably lean towards that. And so I just think a little bit of preparation too can really help if you are in a situation with a new friend to go that next level. Mm-hmm. Deeper.
Well, and with that, I think asking questions, so often we're kind of waiting for that chance to talk about ourselves, especially in a more established mm-hmm. relationship. We really, you know, want to share about how, oh, I relate to that because I experienced this, or when mm-hmm. this happened, that's real similar to what you did. And I think coming into it with a mentality of like, I want to learn more about them and know about them. And so I'm going to listen to what they say and ask a question based off of what they just spoke, what they just said. Then I think that like what's happening, what Emily is saying here, of you feel very heard and loved in a relationship when someone comes in and just like, you're suddenly like, yeah, they never said anything about themselves or like, and I think that's a wonderful gift to someone. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I think it's a, yeah. it's a skill to be able to ask people good questions. But it's something that I think is a mind shift for you when you go into a play date to say, I just want to like hear from her and talk to her and like get to know her heart mm-hmm. instead of saying, well, where are all the ways that I can drop yeah. in my nuggets, yeah. You know, and my experiences.
So good, you guys. That's so good. So practical and helpful. But let's talk about for the young moms who are thinking, I want to do this, but I have little toddlers running around and we're getting together for a play date and I'm spending half of the time chasing my toddler. How do you overcome those challenges of conversation when you're with other moms and their kids?
I'll just be like really honest here. This is still like one of my biggest objections or my biggest hardships with getting together with friends with kids around is like, I've like had just too many times where I've left feeling really sad or angry or not that person, but just feeling like my hopes and my expectations were just dashed. And then I have usually a little bit of a broken relationship with my children afterwards because I feel like they were the barrier between me and being able to like have a friendship. And then that carries over into my days. So I guess like I've just gotten to where if I'm going to go somewhere with more than one child and have a play date, my expectation is that I'm going to be there to like pay attention to my child and help train them and love them. And I may get to have some fun, lighthearted conversation with another woman. And if I get to go deeper than that, that's great. But if I don't, I'm okay. And I try to think like, if I want to have those deeper conversations, like for me, I think that's just probably having to happen in the evening or on a coffee date or something a little bit more secluded. And that's just my own heart and the way I've responded. But I almost need to have like super low expectations so I can not be upset afterwards.
And that's also because she has 5 kids.
Yeah.
So
I may be an odd.
No. The only reason I point that out is because I remember being a first time mom. And you too, Em, like I think we did more play dates at that time.
Yeah.
No, maybe Emmy. but as you know, you have one or two kids, play dates are a little bit easier and it's probably a little bit easier to get time. And I actually, this is super practical, but I had a girlfriend who blew my mind when she texted us before the play date, 3 moms were coming over. She said, girls, are you all okay if we put on a show of like Daniel Tiger and we spend some time praying and we talk about some of those deeper things. And all of us were like, yes, please put on the show. You know, I mean, that was just, it was a half an hour where many of us were going through some really tough things during that season and she knew it. And so she said, I want to create space. And I know you've got kids. I know we don't have childcare. I know that getting meeting in the evening is hard. Let's make time. And yeah, we still had to change a diaper. We still had to change a diaper or two, but overall, like it was way better than when, you know, you're running after kids and they're all just like free playing, which you hope that they're playing with their friends, but really they're just running around, you know, and saying mom, 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 mom. So I think that's something, and I think being strategic of like, you know, not trying to have the conversation when the kids are all hungry or, you know, set them up and send them in the backyard and get some water games out and then, you know, be intentional because that's your moment, mom. And you grasp that moment, and you hold on so tight until it's over. But I think there are pockets that you can create. And then also I think I've FaceTimed one of my neighbors and been like, we didn't have a chance to talk today. Let's finish that conversation. Mm-hmm. And it was at 8 p.m. and we got to FaceTime and, you know, I'm like, you live a few houses away, but this is how we're going to be able to talk in motherhood or, being able to, I think, go out for coffee, you know, at night, again, the luxury that Emily was talking about, taking advantage of that.
Yeah. So. And one thing I think, for Laura, I think is talking about being strategic with your own situation and like knowing what your own limitations are. And one thing that I've done since I feel like the playdate thing for me is hard. I will like Vox Laura a lot during the day. So I don't know if you guys have heard of the Voxer app.
I use it with my friends too.
Isn't it the best?
Yes. It's like, great.
It's like modern. It's like call your friend on the phone.
Risen motherhood would not exist without Voxer. So we're all very grateful.
So I have probably like, I don't know, 5 to 6 friends that I just kind of have on Lifeline on Voxer that throughout the day, throughout the week, I can have really good, deep, intentional back and forth interactions where we're talking about the gospel. We're talking about what's on my heart. I actually have a friend that I just kind of put on retainer recently of like, can I just box you when I have some things going on in my mind that I need somebody to speak truth into? So there's a lot of those types of interactions that are happening. And for me, that's taken the pressure off so that if I do get to see a friend during the week and we have kids around, we can build off of those conversations versus like just starting from scratch. So that's just one other practical tool in your tool belt. If you're like, I'm wanting to have these deep conversations, but I'm not able to see people all the time, it's a great filler.
It's a great app because it's like a walkie-talkie. So you can you can say your thoughts and they may not be able to respond for a few hours, but then they can talk back to you. And so you, whenever you have the opportunity to use it, you can speak to your friends. So I love it too. My kids are older, but it's a great connecting point with my friends because we're all going in different directions. Mm-hmm. We don't have the play dates anymore when our kids are older. And that's actually a challenge because I found friendship to be probably most challenging. I think I can have more conversations now with my friends because my kids aren't right there. Mm-hmm. But the finding time to see friends mm-hmm. now that all of our kids are older and they're doing different activities, or some of my friends that have chosen different kinds of education for their kids. And so that limits the overlap. So how would you encourage moms of kids that are older to make time to see friends or to make that a priority?
Yeah. I mean, I think Laura and I are just starting to like dip a toe in this. I have 3 kids that are in some form of school. And I think both Laura and I have, like I said, kiddo in therapy, which, you know, once you get kind of some kids in school and you have anybody in therapy or doctor's appointments and you've got any type of like other work you're doing as well, I think it does, you know, limit your daytime hours a little bit more. And then like you're saying, we both have friends who do have more school-aged children in totally different school district, or we have moms that are homeschooling their kids and they're maybe a little bit more limited too during the day of what they want to get out and do. And so I do think there are different challenges. But one thing I'm trying to keep in mind is to just invest well with the people that I have natural interactions with. And not to say that all those other friendships go on the back burner, but I think that's one thing. I know Laura was mentioning like, oh, I get to talk to, you know, our other sister-in-law, Becca, in the school pickup line, and that's who she sees. And so I've had to kind of look too at my friendships and say, okay, like, yes, maybe there still is a once a month time where I can go out to dinner with some of these friends and we can still go deep. But also, who are the people that I'm naturally interacting with, and can I go deeper with them and invest in those relationships that are right in front of me instead of, you know, maybe trying to like force something that is a little bit harder, but it's just a really difficult balance. I don't know. I feel like on the front end of navigating that for sure.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of what we talked about earlier, even of the Voxer app or email or texting, you know, finding different forms of communication. And I think it's also the expectation of not thinking that that person, again, has to meet your needs maybe in the same way that they previously did, mm-hmm. and that recognizing that friendships change and they go through transition. And I have a girlfriend that I probably see once a year, and we don't do well at connecting. We don't text ever in between, except if she's had a baby or I've had a baby. Like literally, it's very chill, but she's one of my closest friends. And I would say that I could call her in a moment and she would be there for me. And I could just check in and we pick up right where we leave off. And I think that's just a reality of the way friendships go, is that they do kind of come and go, they ebb and flow. And if you're both in a place where you're kind of secure in your friendship and you feel like, yeah, she's hanging out day to day is with other women, you know, and I'm okay with that. Like, I know that like she has her group of friends and I have my group of closer friends, but like we still have a special and unique bond. And she and I have been friends since like third grade, that you're just secure in what you guys have and what you've built. And you're okay with saying, it's all right that it looks different in this season. And, you know, I pray that God will bring that back in a different way. And if he doesn't, that's okay too. Like, I think there's just an element of lowering the expectations because it's unrealistic to say, I can care for the family, I can run all these errands, I can do all these trips, and my world is here, but this friend is not in that world. And I think that it's got to be okay. Somewhere you have to find peace with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What would you say to someone who they recognize their limits, as you just described, but the other person?
Yeah.
doesn't recognize those limits.
It's a hard situation. Yeah.
It's really difficult. I don't know. I've only had that happen like a handful of times. And I think there was a lot of prayer, and a lot of just, again, gradually and naturally, like letting things taper off. And I had with one friend, I mean, this was like 10 years ago, just having to have an intentional conversation about where I was at and where she was at and why things were changing, because there wasn't that mutual feeling. And, but I've only had to do that like one time. Yeah. I think every other time over time with prayer and just natural life circumstances. And I think when I would, if I do see someone, being really excited to see them when they're there, so they know, like, you don't have a, you know, you're not harboring some weird thing why you've been distant. It's literally like, oh, I've been busy with these things and I'm so happy we get to see each other. And like, let's enjoy this time that we have now. But I don't know if you have any words of wisdom. I think that's like one of the most challenging situations.
Absolutely, it is. Absolutely.
Christine, I'm sure you have a better answer than we do.
I know. What did you learn?
No. Oh, no. Do not turn this back on me.
Yeah. Now we interview you. Didn't you know that's how this works? We turn the tables.
Oh, no, no, no. I don't know if I want to go there, but yeah. I did talk about this in my book a little bit, because I wrote a chapter with one of my friends who, it was kind of that situation where we were just kind of missing each other and in what we were wanting out of the relationship. So I began to ask the question, is it a biblical thing to sometimes walk away from a friendship or to let it taper off, as you said, Emily? And I do think there are times for that, but I also think we let ourselves off the hook a little too easy sometimes easily. And because it is challenging, at least for me in that situation, I think each situation is different, but we let ourselves off the hook because it's too hard.
Yeah.
And it's challenging something in us that needs to be challenged. And that's what my friend was doing for me, but I didn't like it. And so I wanted to look for a way out. But I do think there's something different about what we're talking about with limits, that their limits are limits. We can't overcome those. Those are God-ordained limits. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we cannot see the person as we would like. And I love what you said, Emily, because I do think there's something, this is something I've had to learn, because I want to be able to be in good relationships with everyone and see everyone, but I can't, and none of us can. But to, when I'm there, to truly be engaged with them and to honor them and to ask them good questions and to like you said, enjoy that time for what it is, but not making promises of what I can't fulfill.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And I think, as you said, there's a big difference between there's someone that you're not naturally running in circles with, and it's very difficult because of limits to make the friendship work when they want it to still work. And then someone who you are naturally in a circle with, that's just a difficult friendship. I think those are two really different cases.
Yeah.
And I would firmly agree with you that, like, we let ourselves off the hook too easily, and that I think we need to strive as much as possible to make those relationships work. And like you said, I do think it's something that is within us that says, this isn't as fun as I want it to be. It's not as fulfilling. It's not, you know, I have deeper conversation with this person. And, but if this person is continually being placed in your life, my husband always says, Laura, God is always going to put a difficult person in your life because you don't have very much mercy. And I'm like, he's right. He is so right. I mean, my husband will just lay it on the line, but he's like, it teaches you mercy. And I think it's so true that there have been relationships for me that I feel like, I'm constantly, this is not super fun, you know? And I feel like I'm just kind of needing to meet a lot of needs, but I am thankful because I think it gives me a softer heart, and that it shows me that life is not all about what is so fun and fulfilling for myself, but that, like, I want to extend and have a merciful, kind, generous heart towards other women that I may not understand, but that I can still love them, and that, you know, she can teach me things and I can teach her things. And God, you know what? He just has us in that relationship for a reason. I need to accept it.
Yes. One of the reasons why my relationship was so difficult was because of internal thoughts I was having toward her. And you mentioned comparison earlier, and that was one of the things for me, was she chose something different for her kids as far as schooling. Her personality was really different from mine. And so the way she was responding to things and the way she responded to people, I admired it, But I wasn't like that. And so I began to compare myself. I felt inadequate. I felt insecure based upon God had gifted her a certain way and he had called her to parent and to educate her children a certain way that was so different from me that it pressed on that insecurity. And I wanted, that's why I wanted to run away from it because I didn't like that feeling. And so I would love to talk about that, the comparison factor in motherhood, because I think that is a huge, huge challenge for every one of us when we come in close relationship with people who choose different things, are different personality-wise. So what would you say to women about comparison in friendship?
Go ahead and start.
Well, I think first it's always important to note that comparison doesn't necessarily have to be a really bad thing. I think that we can often compare ourselves with other moms and we can learn to grow in godliness at the same time. So we can find the really great things that they're doing. We can admire those things and then we can use them to spur ourselves on towards Christ. And I think that we can thank God for these great things that she does and find those things. And then observe her, you know, like say, oh, this is different from me. This man, she is better at throwing birthday parties than me. She is better at, you know, cooking. And I love going to her house and eating dinner. And I, you know, you can acknowledge those. Those are real. You know, God created us all with different giftings. And just because you don't have something and she has something doesn't have to be a bad thing. It's a great chance for you to say, hey, can you teach me how to cook? Like, I loved that recipe. Can you send it to me? Or can you help me throw my son's birthday party? Because I have noticed you have a really good gift for that. So I think when you, again, as we kind of touched on, when you find your security and your identity fully in Christ, the gospel frees you to be exactly who God created you to be. And there's no hesitation or reservations of like, oh, I just don't know if, you know, I don't want to be with her because she's better than me at that, or I feel insecure about that. I think we don't have a measuring stick of another woman. We have the measuring stick, God's measuring stick that has been fulfilled by Christ. Excuse me. So, I think that is a key point, is like always, again, checking ourselves, checking our own hearts and knowing where is my heart resting, and then being able to say like, how can I thank God for the good things I see in her? And then I say this often about my husband, but I want to exploit the great things about my husband. I want to like press on those and just like make them shine. And I think that's what we can be called to do for other women. And when you don't feel like, oh, I gotta be as good as her at that, like then you can say, wow, she's really gifted in this area. And like, how can we continue to grow in this together? How can I learn from you? And how can I make you shine? You know, and that's like what a gift you can give to a friend when you feel like I want to build you up and keep you going in that.
Yeah. And one thing I think when I get in that situation and I start internally comparing, because it may be that your friend is really gifted at something or God has called her and their family to something that you like, but you're not necessarily even trying to emulate. And there is an aspect of, I always go back to Romans 14, which is the chapter that kind of talks about how people are going to have different convictions about what type of food choices they make or what festival days that they observe. And Paul is saying, look, each of us is going to give an account to God for ourselves. And so there is freedom in that. There is a matter of conscience that we all have. And so we need to find a way to live together on these areas that are gray and say, it is okay that I don't do what she does because I don't have to give an account for her mothering. I have to give an account for my mothering. And so can I go before the Lord and say, and sometimes like, so I'll give a practical example. Like, I think like screen time is one for me that I can get really like watching, like, what is that person doing? And then like, I can feel self-conscious. And then if I do, I have to go back and say, Lord, like, is this something you're convicting me on? Sometimes the answer is yes. And if it is, there's an opportunity for me to learn from her and say, okay, maybe we need to reorient our hearts toward this. Sometimes though, I look and I say, no, I really have a clean conscience before the Lord in our heart and the way our family is handling this. And it's okay that I don't look like her. I have to give an account, you know, for what we're doing and how we're spending our time and how we're managing our household and how we're teaching and training our kids and our value and our culture. And so that's all I'm responsible for is what he's asking me to do today. And if I can kind of deal with that, then I think it frees me in comparison with other people to say, that's great, because I don't have to account for that. And she probably has hidden sins that I don't see too, you know, that she's going to have to kind of deal with through the gospel. So I don't know. That helps me a lot as I'm processing it.
And a practical way to process is both by praying and reading your Bible and knowing it, and then also talking with your husband. You know, does he agree? Does he feel good about what you guys are doing? And then maybe talk to an older, wiser woman than you, you know, someone from your local church, and find someone that you really respect and admire, and bring them whatever you're struggling with, bring that to them and say, is this something that I need to change, or do I need to let this go? And then can you pray for me that my heart will be adjusted and changed? And so there's some practical steps, but so much of that comparison is in our hearts. And I think that we can deal with it in different ways to greater success, degrees of success, I suppose.
Yeah, it's still a struggle.
So good. What about, as I'm thinking about that, I'm thinking one of the challenges with comparison is we assume that the other person is judging our decisions.
Yes.
And you mentioned earlier, Laura, that you two are good, that you have worked at thinking the best of the other. And how have you done that with your thoughts as far as what does she think about me? Is she not assuming that she's judging you, but assuming that she is thankful for who you are and what you're doing and is praising God for your gifts?
I don't know. I guess for me, like, I just stop my thoughts if they're going down that train. I just don't entertain them. So I don't know necessarily what I replace them with, but if I'm starting to dwell on, is this person judging me, or, you know, is whatever, I just kind of stop and reorient my thoughts towards something else is one thing. But also, I think in terms of our relationship, like, let's say, like, Laura and I go a long weekend without talking to one another, which happens occasionally, like we'll go several days. My first thought is not Laura's, well, maybe it is, like, is Laura mad at me, or like, did I do something, or is she avoiding me because she is judging me about this or that? No, that's, I just stop myself and go, no, I bet she's busy and she's probably wants to talk to me. And, you know, there was something else going on. It has nothing to do with me. And I just flip my thought towards that. And I'm going to go back into our relationship, assuming there's nothing wrong. She's not judging me. She's not holding something against me. And only then, if I were to discover that in the midst of our conversation, could we then talk about it? But I think it's just a matter of, for me, just cutting those thoughts off right there and just going, no, I'm going to assume that, or we're all a lot more self-centered, I think, than other people are.
Yes.
I don't,
one thinks about yourself as much as you do.
No one is thinking about my decisions and the snacks I'm giving my kids and all these things as much as I do. So I'm just going to assume she's busy thinking about what she's doing and not what I'm doing. Unless I discover otherwise, but like 99% of the time there is nothing there, you know?
Yeah. And Emily has been good to ask me, and I think I try to ask her too, that if we feel like something is off in our friendship, like, we address it. We are both, we have learned the hard way to not allow those things to go on where someone's feeling a little bit, especially working together. We have a lot of opportunity to feel frustrated with one another because we're not meeting each other's expectations, or we want different things. And I think that that's something that, like, literally one time Emily stopped a podcast and just goes, hey, are we cool? Like, are you okay? Like, because we wanted to make sure we're driving, and it was other things, but there have been times where we have had hard conversations. Like, our friendship has not been, a lot of people, I think, make this assumption because we are on the show together and we sound happy with one another, of course, that we don't have conflict. And of course we do, but I think we've learned to manage that. And I am a firm advocate of over communicating. And I know that it just, like, I can beat a dead horse or whatever the saying is. But at the same time, if there is a question that if I have hurt Emily, or if I've walked away from a conversation feeling like, you know, that didn't come out right, I wish I would have said it like this. Sometimes she's said, I didn't even hear it like that. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. But I think to say, like, if I feel that nudge from the Holy Spirit, if I feel like that didn't go quite well, I'm going to address that and bring up, because I don't want to create a bitter wedge between us. And so let's deal with things more promptly and more frequently than we think we need to, because overall, I think it's been really beneficial for our mm-hmm. friendship and taught us how to have like good conflict management and resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We women need to be more direct and more willing to engage conflict. Conflict is not a bad thing. That's how we grow, right? And so I think we get so afraid and we want to run away when there's any discomfort, but that's the exact place where God wants to teach us about ourselves, about Him, about the other person. I have found that to be a good thing in my relationships. And one of my friends actually says, you're not really good friends unless you have walked through conflict together.
Yes.
And you have committed to each other that you will stay in the friendship and you will work it out. And I found that to be true.
Yes, 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 yes.
We're just amening
everything you're saying, because when you get to the other side and you realize our friendship can survive a conflict and my friend can see my ugliness and my sin and all the ways that I fall short. I mean, Laura could probably give you a detailed list of all of my sins and the ones that I don't see yet. But when I know like we can survive that, I think actually we now have less conflict because we got through some conflict and you realize like, okay, I don't have to keep up a facade with this person. Like they see it and like they know I'm sinful and they're still engaging in relationship with me. And they are, you know, really letting their love of Christ motivate their interactions with me. And I'm assuming that, and I'm trying to give that back of like, if Laura is having a bad day and has nothing to do with me, of like, okay, I'm just letting that go because we're in friendship with each other. And like, I have bad days, you know? So those conflicts, I think, can allow for less conflict later when you're both more secure in the fact that that person's not going to abandon you when they see how bad your sin and your you know, flaws really are.
I mean, I could talk about that all day because I'm a super direct person. And I think that like it can frustrate me at times because I've just felt like, just tell me because I want to fix it. I want to change. And I think that like a lot of us are like, I don't want to have this conflict with you. And we want to discuss it, but each party is too afraid to make a move. And I do think that goes back to that vulnerability piece of being willing to take off our masks and say like, okay, if I'm willing to take it off first, usually that other person will too, you know, it just takes that first person. And I think too, with Emily and I, especially, I've noticed that the believing the best in one another has really, really been key. Because even when we're frustrated with one another, Emily has said this to me many times. She said, Laura, I think that we both want the same thing. We're just saying it differently or we're doing it differently. But deep down, I really believe that like we want the same thing. And especially when you are united on the gospel, when you're both believers, like that's true. Like you both want to glorify God and you both want to honor Him in what you're doing. And you just are kind of like muddling through it. And so being willing to acknowledge that and say, like, I've had so many conversations with girlfriends that have ended in tears of joy, you know, and happiness. Like, yes, we've kind of cried through it, but you know, I had a dear friend of mine that was a friend for probably just 2 years. It's one of my friends I made in Chicago, so not very long. And we did go through a tough season where our lives changed in different ways. And we went through a big transition and we didn't understand one another. And it was almost awkward to hang out with each other. Mm-hmm. And she finally just came to me and said, what happened to us? Like, I want to be your friend. And I was like, me too. And it just, but it took like 3 months of us sort of being awkward around one another mm-hmm. and not really knowing even the root reason, but the fact that like we both love the Lord and could meet at the cross. I think that that bridges so many differences that I was so thankful she brought it up and just acknowledged it, kind of the elephant in the room. And we cried together and we sort of were able to mend things. But it took that first person being willing to take the first step and say like, I love you. I don't want to lose this. What do we do?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like going back to the dating analogy. It's like having a DTR. Sometimes you don't have a DTR. And say, where are we? Are we good? And if not, let's deal with it. I'm committed to be a friend with you.
Yes.
So what have you learned from each other about being a friend to other women?
Yeah, I think the thing that I appreciate most about Laura in friendships is she just invests in them really rigorously and consistently.
I am not that good of a friend. Do not listen to Emily here. She's just building me up.
Because every week I'm like, wow, she hung out with like multiple people that week and she makes time for it, and not just like her family members, but you know, like friends outside of who she has to spend
real
time
people,
with.
Real people.
Where I'm like, oh, maybe once in the last month, I made that intentional time for a friendship outside of a family member. And I mean, I think personality plays into that for sure. And
for
just,
sure.
Just what you prioritize and what you value. But she's really good at staying consistent with friendships, looping back around to people. I feel like she has like a lot of deep friendships that she's maintained across different cities. And she's just very, she's very good at investing and then maintaining that investment. And I know I just have to really push myself in that area. So I just really admire that she's persistent. You know, she's the friend that will come after you in a good way. And it's like, hey, when are we going to hang out? Why have we not talked? Let's get together. Let's, you know, I haven't seen a friend this week. Let's go see a friend.
I don't know if this is all true, but
it is. So that's something she it's so natural to her. She doesn't even know.
I guess so. When it comes to Emmy, I think that the thing that I love about being a friend with Emily is that when I walk away, I think to myself, man, I want to know God like she knows God. I want to spend time with God like she spends time with him. I want to know Jesus more when I leave a conversation with Emily. And of course, it's not every single time, but overall,
sometimes she's like, man, I'm glad I don't do that.
No. But I'm just saying, like, overall, being a friend with Emily, I think there's an element of she's just emulates a life that loves Christ and emulates the gospel to me. And when I spend time with her, it so permeates her life that it overflows naturally. And I just think, man, I want to be so soaked in the gospel. I want to know my Bible so well. I want to know and love God so well that it overflows into conversations to where I can't help it. And everybody knows. And that, you know, it's just inspiring to me the way that she loves the Lord, that when I walk away from a conversation, I love seeing the way that not only does the gospel transform the decisions that she makes, but it transforms the way she makes decisions. And I get a front row seat to that. I just think that is really special and unique. And I know not everybody gets that. And so I feel honored and privileged that I can kind of see how God's transformed her. I mean, Emily has come so far in the past. Emily's going to cry.
She's crying over there.
I thought about this one kind of hard, you guys. I actually thought about this one because sometimes I don't think about questions as long as I should maybe. But it's like she's transformed over like the past 10 years or so that I've probably known you. And, you know, she went from somebody who was maybe not following Christ as much as she is today to where now she is sold out for the gospel so much. And I have gotten to see that transformation. And it has been a true privilege. And it's been challenging to me, who's been a believer since I was 4 or 5, I don't remember. You know, I've been a believer my whole life. And the fact that like, I'm like, Emily's just like a little speedster in her Christian life, just like blowing past me. And I'm so thankful that I get to be a friend like that. And it inspires me, I'll wrap this up, to be a friend like that to other women so that when they spend time with me, they see Jesus. And I'm not that good at it, but I want to do that the way Emily does it.
Mm. And you just described the goal of friendship, that we would grow, that we would be sanctified, and now hug it out. But I love that. Thank you. That's really encouraging. And I'm thankful for y'all's work that you're doing with Risen Motherhood. So will you tell us as we close where women can find you?
Yeah. Kind of our home base is risenmotherhood.com. So from there you can see our most recent podcast episodes and find our blog, and then also our equipping pages, which we've got some free downloads for Bible study resources. And then we also have just some resource pages of things that Laura and I have found helpful as we're thinking about the gospel in our lives and how that impacts everything we do. So risenmotherhood.com. And then we're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Risen Motherhood. And we're, I think, pretty active across this platform, especially Instagram. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking, I'm like, what do we do on Twitter? But I'm sure we tweet stuff.
Yeah, we tweet things, fun things. Come follow us.
I know.
Well, y'all are doing really good work. So keep it up.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for your time today.
Yes. Thanks for having us. Thanks.
Next week, join me as I sit down with Amber Williams, mom of five and wife to Jamal, who is the pastor of Sojourn Church Midtown in Louisville, Kentucky. Amber is going to share with us some practical tools that we all have at our disposal that we can use to cultivate friendship and be a friend to others. Don't forget to jump over to Instagram and join me for a Q&A every Wednesday on Instagram stories after you've had a chance to listen to the show. Follow me there and watch my stories if you want to ask a question about my chat with Laura and Emily. And speaking of Laura and Emily, you'll definitely want to follow them as well. I've linked to Risen Motherhood and their podcast in the show notes. And hey, one last thing before you go. If you're enjoying this podcast, would you do me a favor and share it with a friend? I would really appreciate you helping me get the word out about this season of By Faith. Okay, friends, thanks so much for listening. Have a great week, and until next time, keep walking forward by faith.